Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. A very warm welcome to this new episode of our podcast. Today, I'm very honored to have Martina Sarapinas as my guest. Martina is the Chief Transformation Officer of Girteca, and Girteca is the largest European transportation company.
This is the CIO Confessions, a podcast by Deva Team.
Martina, welcome to this podcast. Great to have you. Could you please introduce yourself?
So first of all, pleasure to be part of your podcast series and to contribute and share, you know, some of the stories, maybe that will inspire people. And so about myself, so I spent all my professional career with transformations, started my career with Barclays Banking Group with quite big acquisitions and mergers with Africa, Absa Banking Group, and then moved to different product lines. I mean, to investment bank, you know, analytic platforms, and I seen the first mobile apps be born in the UK, mobile banks. So that was quite fascinating times. And then I moved to fintech in Denmark, where I was leading technology behind that fintech, and that was called MobilePay. Also, a great story behind it, very, very modern, still a greatly successful company. And for big, probably surprise for many, for after 10 years in finance, I moved to supply chain in Girteca. But Girteca has a special story to tell, because Girteca story is, it's one of the biggest, largest companies in the country I was born in. And I thought that there is a great opportunity to really elevate them to the next level. Hence, I joined Girteca. So, and this is where I'm spending my life, the 5 years now.
Yeah, amazing experience. And maybe to get the first thing out of the way, in my introduction, I say I interview CIOs. But you're a CTO, but then not really a CTO as we know it, but a Chief Transformation Officer.
Yeah, that's a bit of an a bit of a story behind, because I joined really Girteca as a CIO.
Yeah.
And because this company is private, there was a bit more, I would say, flexibility into how we want to call the role.
Yeah.
Because they needed me, and I was very insistent, let's do it as CIO.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to signal that into very classic business, we are bringing, I would say, one of the industry leading tech guys to transform things.
Yes.
And we're going to inject a, I would say, a digital DNA into the bloodstream of the very classic business and the area. So I wanted to signal that for the market. And that was something we started when we became way more deeper into transformation. And when we changed the new CIO, he came and said, we know all that digital transformations are very hard to do, because they involve usually business, changing business value proposition or business model, or the how you create the service itself. And then, you know, all the things behind it, including technology and process and everything. And he said, I want someone who is helps me to glue my vision of value creation to what needs to be done. And I know that there is a lot of components which need to be done. So we said, if, and that would probably sum up to a transformation lead type of role. And it got transformed to Chief Transformation Officer in that regard. So it's a bit different role. I think we can explore deeper what's the deltas, I mean. But so this is how it became very gradual, I mean.
Interesting. And but before we explore that, maybe a bit of context about Girteca, the large company. What do you guys do?
What do we do? So we do logistics, but not just logistics. So we have been born 25 years ago as a solo truck company. And now we roughly, I would say, 7,000 trucks, around 8,000 trailers, almost 2 billion in turnover, and 15,000 people company. And if you look at the different categories in logistics, you have three type of companies. You have a forwarders, like a DSV, Kuehne+Nagel, DB Schenker, alike. You have us as a carrier. So we are the largest carrier in Europe by far. And then you have platforms like Transporeon, where they don't have no assets and no warehouses, but they do the connecting pieces. A modern way of doing basically logistics. But in reality, those three business models co-live in the same environment, and we are the largest carrier in that in that space. So, but it's not just a carrier business, which we're doing, because we are heavily tapping to this forwarding business model as well, which is another business like we're doing. And we are a very big asset reseller. So what we do usually do, we buy a huge amount of assets Every year we rotate. We use them in operations for a period of time, and when it's the best time to sell, we sell it usually globally, roughly.
Yeah.
So we are one of the big heavy asset resellers in Europe. You could compare the size. So it's public news because we partner with Daimler, Volvo, Scania, MAN, and different manufacturers. So we're the biggest Volvo partner ever in the history of a company.
Okay.
So we buy probably 15% or so production of the plants in Belgium, for example. So we are really heavy in that. So if you look at Gertek, it's these three business models which we play: the carrier, forwarder, and then the asset. I mean, the reseller, in a way. And this is who we are in principle.
And from your perspective, let's first start with. So you have a lot of background in banking, and then you get into logistics.
Yeah.
Is there a big step? Is there a difference or?
Of course, big difference in the industries itself. Yeah. But probably if you remove the industry flavor, I think it's all about the service design. Yeah. Because if you look at the finance is a service. Yeah. Insurance is a service. You know, IT is a service. Yeah. And logistics is a service too. So very big distinguishing factor between if you look at finance or logistics is the truck and the driver.
Yeah,
there is a lot of regulations about working hour, cabotage rules, how you can transport stuff and so on. So that's a huge difference. But if you remove that from equation, I mean, if you take a full process out, then the design of how do you create an engagement to a client, how do you price a service, what's the type of service do you sell, what's extra service on top of your classic, how do you serve your clients through the proper means, you know, different channels of support? How do you take financial operations to be done? How do you borrow money or collect debts and so on? And how do you do NPS and survey and happiness and then repeat it many times? Absolutely same. Yeah. I would say if you took an insurance or finance. So for me, I like to simplify things in life. I think that's the beauty, if you can simplify things, because it's always easy to make them super complex. So the beauty is if you simplify, it's not that hard. And I have this saying, and I learned it from one of my mentors. So best wishes to Nag, if you're listening. So that all business is about people. Behind, you usually have people in interactions. So people selling service and another person buying, people working in a company and doing some stuff to produce a service. So I think there is a huge importance of people in any organization. So for me, if I would eliminate that there is a truck and a driver, in principle, we are talking people business, service design, which is very classic in the industry, and there is no difference.
Yeah.
The difference is in how much profitability and what level of service are we talking? Because when you talk financial services, you're talking, you know, that you can have different financial instruments, investment opportunities, different type of financing structures, etc. In logistics, we are commodity business. I would compare it to more or less like electricity. Everybody wants to have it. Everyone have to have it full access, but they don't want to pay premium for it. It's not like investment banking service where you can, I don't know, make 10 euros out of one. So in that regards, I think this is huge difference, because in commodity or utility type business, you need to be super effective. So every cent matters, and this is what is very, very special in Gerteka too. I at some point compare Gerteka that we are like a Ryanair of roads. So that means we think about everything to extreme. What should be the truck? What aerodynamics do we want? What is our, you know, trucks? Are they special into some extreme or are they standard? And we do a lot of customization to normal operational routines to have best effectiveness in the market. Fuel consumption, I don't know, engagement of drivers, all of those elements. So there is this element probably that service design is same. Still a lot of things about people of interaction, in moment of interaction, service and people, but very different level of industry you play. One is creating a lot of value. Another one is a commodity. And in commodity, there is a different behavior expected from me as a leader, for example, or also from the company and service.
And for your role, does that also mean that there's more, for example, cost focus on what you do?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's always about being rational. A great example would be if I would be in mobile pay times and I would be measured of availability, very strongly of service availability in the industry, you know, what's availability levels, you know, first time resolution, etc., 24/7 work, and etc., all these control centers. So in logistics, when I joined, we've been not in the part of industry, and we started fixing, but at certain point, I realized that in logistics, it doesn't convert to have availability of banking industry. You need to have almost toned down approach to it, because you need to be there when you need, but not extreme. I mean, 24/7 is expected, but not to everything. And that tones down you the focus of organization structures and designs, and at the same time allows you to do it way more effective in a way. Less cost involved and so on. But it's way more pragmatic. I mean, utility squeezes things in thinking. How effective things should be. So that's when the role of transformation office, I have this under my belt. There is teams of IT, enterprise architecture, everything with project organization or strategic focus, shared service centers. So for example, you can basically outsource things if they make sense to do in another locations. And then at the same time, process design. And we pay a lot of attention on how do you design the process, I mean, which will be really put into the systems.
Yeah,
and not to first do the system or buy the system, but how you want to do it so it's effective, and only then convert it to digital so that people can use. And this is very different thinking, because in banking, you would probably say, okay, well, you need to experiment 10 different systems. Let's buy all of those, go in, see which was the best two, and we stay with two. We decommission eight out. Not in logistics. I mean, you would do measured cuts into everything. A slightly different tone, but cost, especially super important, because I'm in the role for 5 years and my first challenge was COVID.
Cool. So nice start.
And I think what it put me into huge pressure is, you know, after COVID, industry has never fully recovered in Europe. I think we will touch it later. So that is a huge challenge that, you know, how do you then bring growth? You want growth, but way more effective way, and you don't have cost or investments to do. So you need to always balance between this right sizing, as I call it. But focus on cost or right sizing is constant priority.
And you mentioned that you look a lot at the processes and how can we improve that. That's, I think, also back to why you changed your role to a chief transformational officer instead of a chief information officer.
Correct.
And then, yes, it's more of a commodity, but I can imagine that also from that perspective, you are looking into how can I have a value add? So not just a commodity, but how can I change the business model?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's one of my strengths, because I've been known in industry for creating exceptional customer experiences and products. And I always look to create different touch points where they make a huge difference. And logistics huge difference is about visibility of your cargo, as an example. We managed to win two industry awards on the visibility in Europe, winning against, I don't know, 130 to 40,000 companies. So, but this is what creates a value. That's why we invest in it. I mean, in specific to create special, industry best. But if it doesn't create substantial value, we would consider always thinking how to do it, how to do it effectively and so on and so on. So, but you're right. I mean, the process design is important in that respect, because when we set ourselves, one of our big visions is to create, I would say, a company 3 times the scale we have today. Obviously, it's hard to say that because now the industry is struggling to grow in any probably area. So, but we do still have that dream. And to do that, you need to raise yourself a bar. Are you growing sustainably, being very effective, where it distinguishes your business model from the rest of the crew in the carrier pool or this forwarding crew or this asset reseller, because there's three business models. And we said, if we want to be distinguished better, that means at least 30% effectiveness in every process we do. Every. More sales through a salesman, better support through a customer agent, better kilometers per truck. Driving maximum hours so drivers can be officially allowed to drive in Europe. So being these pushing boundaries becomes, I would say, a normal day-to-day challenge to ask and demand. And that requires you to redesign, because when you start pushing these boundaries, you at a certain point face these glass ceilings internally. You face bottlenecks. You move bottleneck from one place in the process to another. And we start to realize you need to take the full design back and reconsider how you do the service, which is a transformation which I'm in with the team behind me.
IT Confessions Box. Every IT career has its challenges. In the Confessions Box, our guests share their lessons learned and resilience gained.
CEOs used to be the IT guy, and you have to make sure that that my computer works kind of person. And they're moving more and more to the more value and in the business. So I like the fact that you just renamed it to Chief Transformation Officer, because that might be closer to what we actually should be doing. But I also wonder, because of that flavor of IT, The business stakeholders still have a little bit, but that's the IT guy. You just have to make sure that SAP works and don't bother and don't talk about value. That's my job. So how do you manage these stakeholders? Do they accept this?
So it's a huge transition, which we did, because one of the first things which we agreed with my current marriage, so the CEO of a company, so that I need to show that my biggest interest is business.
Yeah.
So, and I started talking almost nothing about IT in meetings and executive board sessions and etc. More talking business problems, how I can help them to tackle them, service design, what's the value we can create, etc. But then I do have the IT background. That means I can easily go out of the meeting and say, okay, that means this and that and that and that and that. So that is more about this change in tone. For me, I think it was, I would say, 6 to 9 months transition for people to realize that it really helped them to commercial the business, because they still have been at some point looking, but you have the IT in your demand. Yes, I have IT in my disposal, but it is not for myself. I'm there to invest the money for you to make it success. And I will be behind to support the transitions and investments and new tools and changes in core and everything. So I think that's very important. So I invested personally into it a lot to elevate the dialogue a lot and challenge business back when we had naiveness in the room. Because sometimes we had this naiveness, okay, we just need another tool and this problem is out. I mean, in the classical situation, I had this joke many years back. There was this apps for everything. And if you have a business problem, we need an application. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, how many applications do we need? I mean, and then they're better on the iPhone. Oh my God. So I think this naiveness needs to be challenged, because sometimes we don't really talk the real problems. I mean, what is the real ground problem in business or in industry which we need to tackle? And then sorting is, I mean, another challenge. Yeah.
Exactly. But then I guess in the end of the day, sometimes you're also responsible for the uptime of systems.
Of course.
So that's always that dilemma, normal. Right?
That's I think I call it that's something you do behind the scenes. I mean, you're out of office hours.
Yeah, but still you have to balance the resources that you have. So how do you organize that? Is that a separate stream or do you...
No, I try to. I think my philosophy about IT is it has to be working synchronization with business. Mm-hmm. That's what I really like, and I think we did very well with Mobile Pay Times to create a joint teams IT and business. So this agile at scale concepts, etc., where you have different setups, but you align the rhythm of teams. IT people have to understand some business, and business needs to understand that there is some technology.
Yeah.
So both teams need to move into these joint directions, I mean, to meet at somewhere in the middle. If you create this boundary where there is a very clear distinguish between business and IT, you usually have this, you know, black box outcome of IT becoming a black box.
And you end up in conversations that you talk about value, but just make sure that everything works and you talk again.
I think when you start engaging into this business and technology dialogue, what it becomes apparent, soon people go from this level, it will never be delivered, to a point, okay, this is a real problem we need to tackle.
Yeah.
And then very interesting solutions start to appear. Sometimes don't need to buy new systems. It's just change in process, configuration, and you can make it happen. But that doesn't remove the thing that people expect IT to work always. Yeah. We live in a digital age, so
it has to work. Yeah.
I've been called this year once or two over the weekend when some systems slowed down in performance. Slowed down. And I said, now you are. So I think it's important that this is, for me, a hygiene. When you talk IT, you need to have this good approach to your operations, you know, working with root causes, quality of IT, engineering abilities, have people who understand the little things and understand how to work with these new things which come along with technology, because it evolves so fast. But at the same time, the big focus should be applied to create value and sort the real challenge, because this is where you can create this. I think IT becomes an investment, not the cost center.
But I think that's the struggle that I see in a lot of companies, that they know that they need to make that move, but they struggle a bit of getting out of the old way of making it real, your IT, I'm business kind of conversation. So,
but probably that's why we have CIO's role, and different C-level people in the room, because it's not that easy.
So everybody should change his role to Chief Transformation Officer, and then it's fixed, or a bit more work than
better
that,
better as CIO, so that they can demand, at least for a short period of time. But if that is... I think changing a role title doesn't make a huge difference. It's about being honest and agreeing how to play. And I really like the example which we discussed with the leadership team. We have this Formula One example. I'm a motorsport fan, but the same as our current leader. And we had a very good example. He said, if you look at the Formula One teams in the 60s, you have been these hero drivers, crazy cars, super powerful, with no safety technology.
Yeah.
Nobody did know anything except the engineer who did something to an engine. And then people went and did win Le Mans and so on. If you look currently at the Red Bull team, for example, so they are like 2,000 people team.
Yeah.
You can bring 50 people to the pits when the day of race is there. That means 1,150 is in office.
Yeah.
Crunching data points, crunching performance, looking at insights, predicting what things will happen, what's the chance of rain.
Yeah.
What's the best tires to use and so on and so on. And then at the end of the game, you have the driver, which is the final decision maker. But there is a lot of core engineers. Yeah, the engineer for tires, engineer for weather, engineer for something. And at the same time, what you realize is if an engineer for weather comes and says it will rain in the next round, nobody's questioning. They just start preparing for tire change. Yeah. But you can be a nasty man and take your iPhone out of the pocket and say, my iPhone shows that it won't.
Yeah.
So imagine that dialogue, and when you win and need those 2 seconds or 0.2 to win. So I think that's not the proper dialogue to start. So I think what we learn from these examples is that in executive teams, you usually have a unique composition of people. With everyone has its own strength and weakness, but someone is great at weather. Yeah. Someone is great at being tire specialist. Someone knows the engine. Someone is looking that you have finance to run that show. And you have a driver.
Yeah.
And you are the team. And you need to trust that the driver does its own bit. You trust the weather guy and so on. So for me, I think it's about having this honest dialogues in that level of people where you can tap to each other's strengths, where you need to completely trust each other. And I think if I represent IT, I expect that everyone trusts my advice on IT. And they don't take this weather app and said, I believe there is a better architecture for the tunnel. Oh my God, you're starting now. So,
but does it also mean that in building that team that you pay a lot of attention to what is that, what kind of guy or girl is this and how does that fit?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's why I think it's super advice to have these, you know, personality matching sessions and so on. But what I wanted to say with this example is that when you said, is it important how to bridge these dialogues between business and IT? I think we start with first people who lead those. Yeah. So be honest and being trusting each other. And only then you can go to this extremes where you need to really go into technical details. Could be in business, be in IT. But if you can face it in a short meeting, you know, and talk openly about the things, I think that helps a lot. Because if you explain this, I think everybody want to be successful at the end of the day.
For sure.
For that, you need IT, you need business to do the right pricing, you need to serve the clients. And if everything works well, everyone wins.
Yeah.
If not well, I mean, then you lose the race in that example. Yeah. And everybody unhappy, and then the people look who is faulty, I mean, on that. And obviously the driver probably at the end of
always,
the day.
Always. Yeah. So, and does the scale of Gertica, because it's a massive company, it's through also on geographies large, does that make a difference on how you have to do your job?
Of course, but I think our scale is also one of the biggest challenges, because in the normal business model of carrier, which we, I think, still very heavy focused on the classic logistics in that one of the verticals. Usually companies have this plateau stage of growth around when they reach 2,000 to 3,000 trucks. Because then to scale to be 4,000 or 5,000 requires you to re-engineer your processes.
Yeah.
We at some point were 9,000 trucks. So we were 3 times the scale of the normal level company. And when we wanted to go over 10,000, we started to see that it doesn't work that way. I mean, you need to re-engineer, you need to be more technology-driven.
Yeah.
Data has to help you to do business. You can't do everything by a lot of people involved in the ecosystem. So for us to move from the current reality to a new level means a transformation from process to how we do perform on a day-to-day basis. Scale helps us to be partners with big companies. For that helps a lot because if you would ask who are the clients of our company, they are pretty much all the big brands, blue chips that you can have in the list from 1 to 500 top biggest. That also helps us in a way, first of all, you always on our radar because you ask your advice, can you help us in doing business? And you obviously say probably yes, and then figure out if it works. But at the same time, it helps us because to understand how the industry is playing, because some of these companies, I call them as best coach ever.
Yeah.
A great example is an example of Amazon. Amazon is super demanding. Comparing to the industry level of any other customer, I think 5% in every category more demanding than any other. And that means in order for you to work with Amazon, you need to re-engineer yourself.
So
it's almost like if you were a football team and you would hire a best coach ever and he starts squeezing a lemon out of you, I mean, and then you a bit, I mean, unhappy at the point because you believe, oh my God, two more hours of training today. I don't want to do it. But when he steps down and you realize how much did you improve, I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cost anything because they do it for free. They are demanding customer. So you don't need a coach. They are the coach. They, you just need to follow their lead.
Yeah.
So I give this, I said, let's use them as the best coach ever, which is for free. We will maybe never reach this, their expectations at some point. But if we move 5% than anyone in the industry, we are 5% better. Which is huge deal in utility business. I mean, you know how hard it is to construct.
And it prevents you from just going like you did, but also always
pushes
want to improve.
You into limits and so on. And we had so much examples. So I think this is very interesting. So scale helps us to track interest, maybe get these free coaches. Attract business volume, but also plays against us because if we are facing industry problems and in logistics, there is several. First of all, lack of blue collar workers, drivers. All world is suffering. Europe misses around 500,000 drivers today.
Half
the most exposed, probably the biggest exposed example of that was Brexit. When Brexit happened, you remember UK had sending trucks involved military to deliver. Simple groceries to the stores and so on. And that's just an example that nobody wants to be a driver. I always joke, everyone want to be an influencer. If you look at the kids. So that's an easy life. I'm not sure it's easy, but...
You could give TikTok to the drivers and they could be influenced drivers.
We do have, by the way, very famous. We have a few drivers which has its own YouTube channels. They are on national TV as stars because they're filming their day-to-day in work. Their trips, happy moments, etc. Really cool to watch. I was watching sometimes when I'm really bored, but it's cool to see because I can also see how they use our technology and do they really use... Because we have a lot of technology in our truck. And then I can see if they are really using these tablets and etc. Because then they can't lie, you know, because they're natural in their own reality.
That's fun.
But yes, you want. But real challenge in Europe is access to workplace. Migration policy is super hard to get people employed who want to work in blue-collar areas. That's a huge challenge. And we need to tackle these things. And when we are the biggest, we have the biggest impact, of course, because we need the biggest amount of workers. I think a lot of regulational pressure. If you are the biggest, you're always like first on the radar. If anything can go right or wrong, then they will look at you and say, and are you compliant? And you must be. So that is also extra pressure to be great. So I think it plays in both directions. I mean, so it's not just greatness. It also comes with, you know, society pressure. If you are the one which is biggest on roads, so how do you ensure sustainability, for example? And you say, this is what we're doing. Because if you don't say you don't, of course you won't. You have bad time.
And it's 2024, so we have to talk about AI, right? And I can imagine a company like Kriteka, definitely a lot of data because you have all these trucks driving around. And but AI, what's the AI story?
So probably not the one which everybody would expect to hear, not about Gen AI. I did recently, 2 weeks ago, I was in Miami on a conference and I spoke about how we use AI in business, but we use AI for a very different purpose. So when I joined in 2019, Kriteka was really understand that industry has a major problem. So Europe logistics, one of the major problems is empty mileage. An average empty mileage, if I remember right, is around 15 to 30% of total mileage.
And that's a truck driving without load.
Exactly. That's a truck driving without load, polluting the environment, not creating any value, but utilizing the fuel, the cost is there. And you believe that those costs are not transferred anywhere, they're transferred to your grocery prices.
For sure, yeah.
That creates a lot of pollution, and there's a huge sustainability challenge behind it on its own. But industry estimates it's around 30 billion costs for Europe alone every year. So when I started, so it was four or five years ago, so it's 150 billion, which is an industry on its own almost.
Yeah, yeah, to tackle. It's a country almost.
Yeah, country almost, yeah. And we took, we were experimenting how we can improve this, because the great example, I think, is Amazon itself, because they run logistics in their own network, so they can optimize everything. Second best AI use in business at big scale was UPS in America. UPS, door-to-door delivery. They have this very famous Orion network called this a platform for inventing this don't turn left rules and etc. And optimizing how many this door-to-door deliveries they can do every day. But nothing done for long haul.
Okay.
Long haul, full truck, driving long distance, 1,300 kilometers over many countries.
Yeah.
How to optimize that? Yeah. And we took that challenge, and we made a very brave decision in 2020 that we're going to create a system based on AI. But not Gen AI, but the previous version, machine learning-based, algorithm-based AI. So we took that in the core, and with the help of Hungarian partners, who was a startup who had the idea behind it, we basically create a system, and it's live for 4 years, so which helps us to optimize scheduling of trucks at the global network in Europe. So to give you a sense, that means we can optimize, create a holistic plan of how to do tomorrow deliveries with the best truck, lowest cost, best performance, best KPIs with 5 minutes. So that allows us to constantly replan and make a plan better. But that system alone gives you a plan, but you need to execute the plan.
For sure.
Yeah, because plan is a plan, but as in business, if you don't do anything, it's just a dream.
Work, yep.
So for us, what also how to move that to a truck so that the plan can be followed. And hence, we had another edition of it, which we put in time. We put an ecosystem of these tablets with an Uber-like experience where drivers get the very detailed instructions, navigation guidance.
Okay.
Where to go, where to refuel, how much liters and into which tank and where to stop, at what part, maybe pre-book those spots so they arrive and they can find a secure parking as an example. So this helps us to optimize a lot, because if you follow this lead of what AI gives you, I think we're industry leading them. I mean, by far. But there is always deviations. Yeah, you have accidents, you have traffic jams. You have, you know, all things that can happen in life, in the real world, in roads. So I think this is very important. But we took AI into operations, but not the one which everyone is knowing now, in, as of ChatGPT got so famous, but a few years earlier than that, but in different perspective. I still believe it's one of the biggest planning systems which we have in Europe in logistics, unless someone who is listening knows a bigger one.
Then
text me or write me on LinkedIn. I think that would be nice to learn and exchange ideas, because hopefully we're not in the competition, but very interesting. So I think we invested that. But when Jenna came on board, for me, the big learning is that everyone talks about it. Like we want to touch it today. And I seen the very interesting examples of some selective sectors or areas of use. Like, for example, utilizing that for digital marketing. Creating
for sure,
digital assets.
Yeah.
Probably best example I seen, I don't know if there is where also, I seen a very interesting example of Adidas. Also content creation. And that was 6 months after the ChatGPT was launched.
Yeah.
So very early.
Yeah.
Amazing, I mean, experience which they can create for you as a customer, because they can tailor your website. So Adidas.com depends if I open or my wife opens the site.
Yeah.
It's different experience. If I browse for black, you know, sneakers, she might browse for, I don't know, pink. She will get the pink site. Very different experience.
Yeah.
So it's a customized content.
Yeah.
Based on who is browsing, could be integrated with sensors in stores. If you come to Adidas store and take a sneaker look at it in the next in the next TV screen, which will be on a, in the New York City, you can see that ad in front of you.
But and that's amazing. But is that the big revolution, you think, or is?
I think in some era it has a tendency to maybe become a revolution if you look at what big big tech companies are talking, but I think the practical use of it still lags behind.
Yeah.
And my learning is now, I think there is a lot of hype about it because it's believed to be the new black.
Yeah.
But it needs time.
Yeah.
It's like internet. It was, oh, it will be great. And it became.
Yeah.
But just took 20 years.
Yeah,
so.
I tend to see something that it's an amazing solution, but for what problem? We are still identifying the problem that we try to solve, right? Yeah.
Correct. Absolutely. I would support you. And for example, maybe there's problems where it can work to get not replace a person behind, but support us in coming closer to options. And a great example also that recently I've been exploring was Novartis in Switzerland producing drugs. And you know that they have this normal cycle, you know, inventing a drug, then going through the compositions and doing animal tests and stage one, stage two, stage three, and then it's in stores. So I asked one of the VPs of Novartis, and they show that they currently have only one drug out of many which was created by humans where it's in stage three trials.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
You also can look at how much they produce in a normal way, I mean, of people, laboratory. But what he said, interesting thing in this, is the approach how AI helps to remove noise around. For example, you have options where you try 1,000 drugs at the same time. He said he can remove 50% out, which is nonsense, which will never go to the next stage. So it allows you to focus, save costs, because to produce a drug, it takes a lot of time, make it faster. But you still need humans to finalize and refine it and so on. So for me, the current assumption is probably it takes more time. We have not maybe found the, I mean, wow effects into every industry where it works really, really well. We've seen selective examples where it creates us unique experiences, you know, helps it to tailor the content, maybe helps to this come to a resolution faster, but you are the final end, a human making a final call. Yeah.
And also in that drug example, it's probably more the old-fashioned normal AI, the machine learning, than really Gen AI.
I assume so, yeah.
But I also see more attention to the AI that we already knew because of the Gen AI. People said, that AI thing might work as well. Correct. Let me take a second look at it.
Correct. Absolutely correct. And but it is a fascinating technology. If I would need to bet what will be the next big game changer, I think I still would bet on AI.
Yeah.
But it needs time. I think big countries also betting on it, like US, China, you know, they try to put a lot of emphasis in economy on it. But it just needs time. Yeah. And we in this interesting stage of life where we've seen zero cloud computing, long we see cloud computing to become available, then enormous amount of data floating through everything.
Yeah.
Now then, huge computer abilities to just consume that amount of data and produce something.
Yeah. So
Google search, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Then iPhones changing how we interact with things. And now we also see this gen, you know, everything NVIDIA coming, to process all these different flavors of information, which can be digital, cloud, you know, picture, voice, anything. I think it's interesting time. Maybe it just needs extra time to just, I mean, mature a bit. But the topic is interesting for sure. I would be reading, I would say, about it more and more. Yeah,
read but more about it, for sure. Yeah. And it takes time, but time flies. So we're already at the end of our podcast recording. So maybe in this time already we see a new breakthrough. Let's check online. Martinez, thank you so much for your insights and sharing your story with us. It was great to have you on the show. And for everybody listening, thanks for being with us and see you next time. Bye-bye.
Discover other podcasts on devateam.com/podcast. Devateam, AI-driven tech consulting.